It's Friday, June 15th, and you're listening to the Geek News Central podcast, sponsored by GoDaddy.com. Geek News Central is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Hey everyone, got a great show for you tonight. Thank goodness it's Friday. Strap in, here it comes.
This is the Geek News Central podcast, part of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. So grab a cup of coffee, take a seat, and crank up that volume, because you're listening to Todd on the Geek News Central podcast.
Aloha and welcome to the Geek News Central podcast. My name is Todd Cochran, coming to you as live as it can be from historic Ford Island here in Honolulu, Hawaii. How's everyone? Well, I tell you, it's been a very, very busy week. I am so ready for the weekend. I told my lovely wife this afternoon, I said, honey, when I come home from work, I'm going to sit down. I'm not going to use the computer. We're going to watch movies. We're going to kick back. Friday night is going to be an absolute unplugged evening. crazy busy. Has everyone else been as nuts as I am? it's been a wild week, but, hey, thanks for, tuning into the show, and for all of you that are long-term subscribers, thanks for being part of the Ohana here. And if you're checking out the show for the very first time, hey, make sure you get over to geeknewscentral.com. Check out all the great content over there. And, of course, subscribe for our newsletter. It's available on the third column of the website. That'll get you the show notes delivered directly to your inbox immediately following the show. Well, I tell you, it's very, very late here in Honolulu. I got a late start tonight to recording the show. But, gosh, I know we had a little bit of a malfunction at the completion of the show on Monday night. Matter of fact, I wasn't even done recording Monday, and I heard my telephone beep at me, and it was, I get a instant message anytime my server goes down, and it beeps a certain way. I've got it set up to ring on a special, you know, special beep when it's something urgent. So I was actually listening to an audio comment near the end, and it's my service said, hey, your server's not responding. So I was kind of in a mild panic when I finished the show up, and because it really never goes down. And sure enough, as soon as I got done recording and loaded the web browser up, the server didn't respond. So I thought, okay, it just needs a reboot. So I loaded my SSH client up, and I tried to log in, and that didn't respond. I said, uh-oh, not good. I went over to GoDaddy, logged into their panel where you go in, or I can manually have asked them to do a reboot. And submitted a reboot, and sure enough, 2-3 minutes later, the machine still wasn't up. So I got on the phone, called their customer service, told them what was going on, and sure enough, the box had suffered a hardware failure. There was something in the box that had went bad. Thank goodness, quote unquote, it wasn't the hard drive, because it had made for a very, very long evening. It definitely would have. I wouldn't have slept all night to get the to get the machine back up, but fortunately they said, oh no, it doesn't look like it's a hard drive. We should be able to have it up for you here in a few hours. And I went to bed, and I got up at about 4:30, and about 5 minutes before I got up that morning, the an email was in, say, hey, wait, your server's back up, you're online, logged in, published the show notes. And then I did a really dumb thing. The link on the website, I put the wrong URL in. I did GNC, TAC 2007, TAC 06, TAC 0, and I put a 0 in instead of having the correct the date in there. The URL was an extra digit too long, and hit publish, and it wasn't no more than about 30 minutes. I was getting emails saying, hey, something's not right. Your URL was incorrect. And I also had sent out the newsletter with the incorrect URL. So I probably got, oh gosh, maybe 600-700 emails within the first 5 or 6 hours that morning. And I just had a little notepad, and I cut and paste, responded to everyone that the new URL. So, gosh, what that happens just every once in a while. But boy, there's nothing worse than get into a mild panic. But that machine's been great, and it's been running for a couple of years now without any issues. And they got the machine turned right around, got it back up, and I have all the data backed up. So I wasn't so worried about that. But, you know, essentially when you blow a hard drive in a server, you know, you have to go through the rebuild process. And it definitely takes a little while. It's time consuming. But fortunately, that was not involved. But that did kind of remind me, I've got a couple things I need to do. And I put a challenge out there tonight. I actually sent a Twitter out. I said I got about 10 hours worth of server work that needs to be done. I'm willing to pay someone to take care of that for me. And it's just, I don't have enough time. I can do what I need to get done, but what I've got is I've got a server that's a backup machine that essentially is not acting as a backup machine for Geek News Central and about 10 other websites. So I put a challenge out there. If anybody's a Linux user and you have experience working with CentOS, let me know, because I'm moving. What I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be moving all the domains and everything over to this CentOS box. It's already set up, and get everything running over there. Do an IP flip to that new machine. Let the other machine be reprovisioned. It's running an older version of Fedora. So I want that new machine or old machine reprovisioned to CentOS. And then I'm going to move everything back, because the main machine is a lot more powerful. So that is kind of the plan, and if you want to do, it's probably about 10 hours worth of work total, and it actually won't even be that much, to be honest with you, but I'm being overconfident in someone's ability to get that done in a short amount of time, but I'd love to pay someone to do that. Send me an email, geeknews@gmail.com, and I think I already had one inquiry already from one of the resident geeks that listened to the show. And see if he responds in the morning. So I may have someone already interested in doing it. If not, send me an email for sure. But you need to know your way around a dedicated box. That's all I do ask. I did do a Sherrycast with my mom yesterday, so we got that out. That's up online at sherrycast.com. I've been working on stats, been talking to vendors, been really ramping up for the podcast awards. As a matter of fact, if you are a podcaster, you now can go over to podcastawards.com. Definitely, you're going to want to put a banner up on your website, because this is going to get your listeners aware of what's going to be going on. And what's really cool about putting a banner up on your website, you've got a chance to win some significant exposure for your show. So there'll be the links are up. The new graphics are up on the graphics page, and you can cut and paste one of the four different graphics. Stick it up on your website, and as long as you use that little code that we provide you, and every time someone clicks over into the Podcast Awards website, what we're going to do is at the end of voting, or actually nominations, we're going to actually take a look and see who drove the most traffic to the website. That person's going to get a 120 by 120 banner on the website, and then we're going to take another measurement about the time voting starts and see who the next person is. And then when voting ends, we're going to have we're going to give three 120 by 120 graphic spots up on the website. It's good for a year. The website last year received a little over 8 million individual page loads, the majority of those coming in about the 90 to 100 days of following the awards. So hey, go over and get some banners on your websites, and help, you know, promote the website, and help promote getting your show some recognition. But we've got that up. I've got those graphics up on podcastawards.com. Okay, I think I've got all my major little notes here talked about. But one thing you'll definitely want to do is get over to GoDaddy.com and check out their hosting accounts. Now, I just had a great example of great customer service provided by that company, you know, and really I just called into the normal helpline. I didn't have to go out and reach out to any of my contacts. I said, I got a problem. They worked it through. They said, yep, you definitely have a problem. We'll get back with you. And within a couple of hours, they had the dedicated server back online. And I'm going to tell you, when you're running a dedicated box and run into a problem like that, it's very unusual for a company to act and react that fast, and they really did. So whether you're looking for a shared hosting account, a virtual dedicated server, a dedicated box, and the dedicated box is with their GoDaddy control panel, oh my goodness, all makes it just about easy enough for anyone to be able to have their own dedicated box. But when you get over there, use the code POD58. It's going to save you some money on hosting accounts. And also, you can use the code Todd, which will save you additional 10% on your orders, or Geek5 to save 15% off your order of $20 or more. Lots of good things happening over at Tech Podcast, too. We're starting to add a lot of new shows, and we're starting to work on our agenda for the next roundtable. We want to get another one knocked out here before the end of the month. So looking forward to having another one of those, and we hope that you'll join us, of course, with our sponsor, GoToMeeting. These days, whether you're in business or simply want to share something with friends or family, email and voicemail just isn't enough. That's why you should try GoToMeeting, a web conferencing solution that will revolutionize how you communicate with your business associates, family, and friends. And to give you an example, tonight I was just sitting here, and I was running into a problem with a backup script that I was setting up. Angelo, my lead developer, was online and said, Angelo, can you help me out? And he says, well, go ahead and let's get into a GoToMeeting session. Let me have control, and I'll drive around and show you what you need to do. And he did exactly that. So he was actually even able to control what was on my desktop from his side. So very, very versatile tool, very secure. And with GoToMeeting, it's just like you're all in the same room. Try it yourself for free for 30 days. Just visit GoToMeeting.com/tech podcast. That's GoToMeeting.com/tech podcast. Try GoToMeeting free today. Okay, we've got a lot of stuff tonight for you. I mean, there's a lot. I mean, this is going to be a fun show. It really, really is. And I got a flag to give away too. We've got a whole bunch of people that responded. I was a little worried because not everyone got the show on time. But don't worry, I'm going to give away some more stuff tonight. We're going to talk about how you can get involved on that. You have to be signed up on the newsletter. So very, very simple. Go over to geeknewscentral.com, click on the newsletter link in the third column of the website. Put your name in the hat for the newsletter, and we're going to give a couple of cool prizes away. Some things that you're not going to get anywhere else. You will not be able to get these items in the lower 48. And it's not Hawaiian in nature. It's a commemorative item and very, very exclusive. So it's going to be a very, very cool prize. So get signed up on the newsletter, and we're going to pick a couple of people off the newsletter list. So and these are cool. These are some really, really cool prizes. So it's going to be worth your time to go over there and do that. But to give the flag away a little later here in the show, let me first of all talk about a website that tonight I just rocked my world. My good friend Annie McCaskey over at slash.review at slash.review.com. We've been talking in our Tech Podcast mailing list today. One of the guys was having some hosting issues and some RSS feed issues, and there was just some stuff going on. And we were talking about shared accounts, and we were talking about the differences and, you know, server loading when it comes to media. Great conversation going on there. And Andy was expressing some of the issues he had before when he was on another service. And he says, when I went and utilized a tool called MyIPNeighbors.com. It's MyIPNeighbors.com. I'm going to put this link up in the show notes. Very, very cool. So if you've got a shared hosting account, you can tell how many people are on that same computer. So if you're, you know, experiencing some slowdown with your machine, you can go over and actually run the IP of the machine you're on and be able to tell how many different websites are on there. Very, very cool. So I was playing around with it a little bit, and because I'm running a dedicated box, I put my dedicated IP in, and it said, yep, there are 10 domain names that are associated with this box, and they were all mine, of course. And I said, oh, that's really, really cool. So I think this is a tool that, actually, I had looked for something like this before, and had not found it. So here's your chance to see how many people are your neighbors on your shared hosting account, or if you're in a virtual dedicated box, be able to tell that as well. Also, I got an email, actually got an instant message from, I believe it was JP. I apologize if it was the wrong, if I'm telling it's the wrong person, but he sent me some Flickr photos of the most recent shuttle launch that was done by an amateur. A very, very, very cool bunch of pictures. Very nice for an amateur doing the job. I'm going to talk a little bit about the space shuttle here in a few minutes, but I've got a couple more articles that were submitted by people either via instant message or email that don't necessarily listen to the show that I'm going to put up tonight in the show notes. So make sure, you know, when you're signed up for the newsletter, you get the show notes delivered directly to your inbox. So you get this stuff delivered to you. But if you are not subscribed to the newsletter, and again, we don't... the only thing we send out on that is the show notes, and every just once in a blue moon, I'll send out an email blast, but it's very, very rare. We don't share your information with anyone. Don't sell the list. We hold that information very, very privately here and never would give that information up to anyone else. But let's go ahead and I'll dig in here, load up FeeDemon, and get into the stack of stuff I've got. It's great. It really, really is. You know, the folks up there at the International Space Station today, over the last couple of days, they've had their hands full. You know, they got the new power sails up, I guess, or the solar panels were put up, but they're trying to get another one retracted that needs to be moved, and that one is proving to be a pain, just like the last one was, and they're having a hard time getting it all folded back in. But, you know, they've been doing their little pull routine. If you haven't seen how they've done that before, it's you know, it's just pure brute force to try to get these things in and hanging out the end of the arm and actually going out there and trying to get it to fold in correctly. But not only that, but in the Russian segment of the space station, they lost when this new power came online. Apparently, they had some kind of a fluke and the Russian computers stopped working. So for the last couple of days, they've been fighting this, and they're already talking about, you know, maybe abandon ship. They may have to leave because if these computers don't come up, then they're going to be dealing with a International Space Station that they're not going to be able to completely control. They use several different ways to keep the attitude right. And the Russian segment actually has is the jet propulsion, the little things that keep the orientation correct. The servos on the American segment do most of the work, but when the shuttle pulls away, they usually have to use those jets, so they're really, really worried about what's going to happen here. And it possibly extended the shuttle Atlantis another day. They've already extended it once for the repair they need to do. But, you know, they're saying they may actually stay an extra day on this. They've told the Atlantis crew to shut down all unnecessary power. So it looks to me like this could turn out to be one of the most spellbinding missions in a while. Now, hopefully the Russian engineers get their acts together and get those computers back up. The latest I found on this was a USA Today article that actually is being released this morning, that's saying that they're making progress on it and that the Russian scientists kind of have a lead on what may be going on. So anyway, wish them luck, and hopefully everything works. I'm sure it will. You know, there's some very, very smart people out there. A Business Week article out is implying that, you know, PayPal, the service that many of us use, is almost the point where it's now going to be called the Bank of PayPal. They're doing huge, huge revenues, apparently $439 million in the first quarter, as compared to their owner, eBay, whose business only grew 23%. PayPal's revenues grew 31% in the first quarter. So it appears that this property is very successful for eBay. Now, you know, I use PayPal a lot. That's how we pay most of our podcasters. That's the way most of them want to get paid. Very few people actually get checks. How many of you do a lot of PayPal business? You know, I think PayPal could get to the point where they could almost have a business offering that would compete with banks. It completely doesn't replace banks because there's no way, at least I don't know of a way right now to physically deposit money with PayPal, but it may get to that point where you can actually, you know, use them as your deposit place. But you know, there is a little bit of risk with that because they're not, I don't believe they're insured like normal banks are, but it seems to be PayPal continues to grow and do good things. So I'm sure many of you have PayPal accounts as well. All right, how many of you would be able to take your PDA, your cell phone, your MP3 player, all of your tech gadgets, your computer, email, the whole nine yards, and just walk away from all the technology or put them in a, you know, go cold turkey? Well, that was a tech junkie's dilemma who tried to go cold turkey, and he lasted a couple of days. And he called it the 8-step technology detox. And he thought he could wean himself from his addiction of technology. And, you know, I've got a pretty good case point here. When right after 9/11, there was I actually headed off and went to overseas. And I actually got in an area where we had a communications blackout. No cell phones, no phone calls out, no email, nothing. So it was like essentially a 12-step program for a technologist. Now, you all know me. I'm a big geek. I got to have my email fixed every day. Well, that wasn't happening. And for, I think, 76 days, we were essentially in a technological blackout. And, you know, it was almost like a breath of fresh air that first time I was able to get email. I think when I checked my email that time, I had like 22,000 unread emails or something ridiculous like that. I think I took the whole lot of them and just deleted them. I don't think I actually, I read a one of them. I may have read the last 200 or 300, but it was impossible to catch up on all of them. But anyway, this is a pretty fun story about this guy who tried to go cold turkey, and it talks about, you know, what worked and what didn't, and it goes into some of his trials and tribulations. I don't know if I actually, there was an article that was out last month that I was quoted in the Wall Street Journal, and it was when I was in New York City. I don't remember if I ever linked this up in the show notes or not. I'm not going to make a lot of it. I'm going to link it up tonight. If I did, I apologize. If not, there's a few choice words in there from me if you want to take a look at it. I want to talk just a few minutes about Mahalo.com. And, you know, I've talked a little bit about this already, but the last couple of days, Jason Calacanis announced that they were going to launch, or they did launch, the Mahalo Greenhouse. And what the Mahalo Greenhouse is it allows people to sign up, and they allow people to edit pages and accept search results, and where they're going to be paying people $10 to $15 per search result page. Now, I've got a little bit of an issue with this in that I understand that, you know, a lot of people are probably going to go for this, but anytime you have human editors that are going through and editing and adding information to a search term or building a search page with information, everyone has agendas. And agendas play very large in these types of sites. So you have to use a lot of oversight to make sure that people aren't in there purposely creating pages that stifle maybe the competition of other companies. You know, it's very, very easy to do. And a case in point was, and I've talked about this in the show a few times, is a number of years ago, before I started blogging, it was kind of in a lull between when the BBS stuff kind of died and before I found blogging. There was a few years there that I just didn't have a lot of stuff to do online. And I was actually editing the DMOZ.org. And if you remember, if you haven't seen DMOZ.org before, I haven't been over there and actually looked at the site in a couple of years. But what it was they had thousands of editors that were editing categories, and you would essentially apply for a category, and you would actually control which links were in there. You would write the descriptions, the whole nine yards. It was kind of on the same level as Mahalo.com. But they had these gods within the DMOZ.org organization that were called Edit-Alls. And they all could, they had the power to, without question, be able to remove editors, change the arrangement within the category structure, do rearrangements. And I had worked 2 years on two sections. I had worked in the bulletin board section and had a very, very fair section. It talked about all the different systems out there, the software, you know, it had all the links. And then I also worked in the U.S. military section working on the Navy portion. Now, at the time, I think I had nearly 2,100 links built into the Navy section, all fully categorized, stuff that was linked to historical sites. I mean, it was just absolutely the best resource out there for naval heritage, you name it, it was in there. Well, there was an edit all that I think had a little bit of an agenda, and she continued to just harass me and harass me and harass me about that specific category and complaining about stuff, and she would rearrange stuff, move it around, and, you know, and there was nothing I could really do, except one morning I woke up and I found that I had been removed from the category. Well, make a long story short, she replaced my position with someone from France. And if there's someone from France listening, please don't take this wrong, but she assigned someone from France to edit the U.S. military Navy section. And within 2 weeks, this guy dismantled 2 years worth of my work to put together this huge resource. And it was devastating to me because I was incredulous. I couldn't believe what had happened. And there was an agenda that this edit all had in this directory. Now, the Mahalo.com website is on a little different structure, but at the same time, if you have individuals that have agendas and they are the controller of a search word, unless there's oversight, there could be very easy for this thing to be a good old boys club. Now, I have not yet read, and maybe someone can point me out where their policy is and how they're going to combat this, because I've looked at a few pages already, and my thought process was, it looks like a lot of the same people that are always getting their back scratched are on certain pages. So I'll let you all weigh in on this and what you think. Tell me if I'm incorrect here. Okay, tell me if I am not on board with their complete plan. Jason, if you're listening, I'd love to hear how you're going to combat this and why Mahalo.com is different. How it's different than the DMOZ and how you're going to mitigate this. That's what I want to know. And I think it's a great idea, and I think it has huge potential so long as you can keep the agendas that people have out of it. And unless some people, you know, because there's people who are going to be signing up for this, are going to have agendas. I can absolutely guarantee it. So we will see what happens with the greenhouse, and we'll also see what's going to happen to the rest of the website. So I spent more time on that than I probably should have, but it does concern me. It's something that I keep an eye out on in these types of ventures. Congratulations to the Open Ads folks. They're the ones that actually I use Open Ads on Geek News Central. We use it over at Raw Voice as well. Open Ads is a very good open source ad server. Those folks raised $5 million in venture capital, and they're going to be taking their open source project to a new level. So congratulations to them. Those of you that have been using Yahoo Photos, better transition to Flickr, because Yahoo's planned shutdown of Yahoo Photos has begun. And they've started to close accounts and transition users over to Flickr. So if you haven't been notified yet, you're going to be, okay? And you have the ability as well to move your pictures to either Shutterfly, Kodak Gallery, Snapfish, or PhotoBucket. So they're saying, you know, Yahoo's being pretty cool about letting people transition their stuff to sites that are off the Yahoo Photos website. They're not forcing you to go over to Flickr. So I guess that's good in that part, but definitely Flickr is the rule here. Now, what's kind of funny is I got talking to my daughter who's here, and I said, what do you use? Where do you put your pictures? Well, I put most of my pictures on MySpace. I said, do you use any of the other services, Flickr? And she said, I do use PhotoBucket. And I was like, oh. So I'm trying to ping her a little bit here for what her age group was primarily using, and I think it holds pretty close to other demographics that are out there. Along with that, on the other side of the fence, YouTube redesigns and they're moving to Google accounts on YouTube. So now when you're going into YouTube, it's going to be tied to your actual Google account. And, of course, they've made changes to their player already that we've talked about already. And they're actually making some changes, though, to the interface as well. So that transition is starting to really take hold. And now the new login page probably lists YouTube features like tagging, and it gives you the ability to browse and join and create video groups, and a lot of the stuff that's been there already, of course. So, but you're going to get this big old window that's going to come up and say, sign up for YouTube with your Google account. Or if you log in with your YouTube account, it's going to try to transition you over to the to their system. So I guess that was expected. Didn't take too long. Oh, by the way, speaking of Google and speaking about transitioning accounts, today is the day. Today is June 15th. Today is the day that you have had to have chosen whether or not to opt out of FeedBurner. And if you had not opted out, your data now is the property of Google. Yeah, you heard me correctly. You read the terms of service of FeedBurner. If you haven't logged in, your data now is the property of Google. So congratulations to all of you that are on FeedBurner feeds. And, you know, it's kind of funny. I have privately gotten some email over the last couple of weeks. And people keep linking to my rant on that. We won't rehash it. We don't need to. But, yep, your data now belongs to Google. Okay, over on scripting news. And I guess maybe what I should preface this with is I wrote an article on Geek News Central yesterday. I used to be an AT&T long-distance customer. Matter of fact, I have a bill here of international calls that my wife did that was $96 last month. They've had a good international plan, but I refuse. I wholeheartedly refuse to support a company that has agreed to spy and report directly to the MPAA and RIAA. What they're going to do, now think about this for a second. AT&T has fiber. They've got internet connectivity nationwide. They have people up on their internet service provider business. They have people using mobile phones on their network, on their edge network, I guess. They have lots and lots of internet traffic that's transversing their specific network. They have agreed to sniff that traffic, and they're going to find the people that are sharing files via peer-to-peer, and most specifically sharing copyrighted materials via peer-to-peer, or people that are moving copyrighted material back and forth, not necessarily via peer-to-peer, just the act of moving it. And they're going to report that information directly to the MPAA and RIAA voluntarily. Again, while I do not condone file sharing, again, I'll say that again, I do not condone file sharing of copyrighted material, I am very concerned about individuals' privacy rights. And I continue to be very critical of companies that they say They are actually going to spy on their customers. So I had a choice. I called AT&T and I canceled my long distance service with them. That's the only thing that I have with them right now. Matter of fact, my wife was mad because she tried to make a call to Japan and she couldn't because we didn't have any long distance service for a little while yesterday. And I called one of their competitors and I signed up for it, their service. And when I canceled, I told the AT&T customer service person exactly why I was canceling my account with them. Now, I've used all the services. I've used Sprint, I've used MCI, I've used AT&T. I've switched back and forth between different ones. Matter of fact, many years ago, I made a lot of money with MCI, actually selling MCI Dial 1. And matter of fact, I think I still make some money on some of those accounts that we sold way, way, many, many years ago. But here's the kicker on this. Here you have a telecommunication company who says they're going to spy on their users. What do you think about that? What do you guys think about it? Is that just, to me, it's like, I can't believe it. I really can't. And Dave Weiner over at Scripting News, while there are some things I agree with that Dave says, and there's some things I wholeheartedly disagree with, him and I are two opposite ends when it comes to certain issues, but here is a statement that I completely agree with. He says, I don't believe in the death penalty for people. He says, but I do believe in the death penalty for corporations. So I'm going to start where I, you know, necessarily I'm going to weigh in here. He says, where I do believe in death penalty for corporations, sometimes they do something so heinous, so unacceptable that the only just punishment is oblivion. Now, he talks about Exxon when they tanker wrecked and destroyed the ecosystem up there in Alaska. And then he talks about, and today, if there was a death penalty for corporations, AT&T may have just earned it. He says, imagine they have designs of selling access to movies and stuff over the internet, so they decide to join with the MPAA and RIAA to spin on and prosecute their customers. Can you tell I'm upset about this? Now, I'd gotten an email from one of you that said, Todd, we know about the RIAA. Don't harp on them so much anymore. Stop, stop, stop. I'm sorry. You know what? You have to stand up. We have to stand up, and we have to tell these companies that we don't agree with what they're doing. You need to blog this. You need to tell your friends. You need to tell everyone. You need to call your congressman and complain. And not that it's going to do any good. If we don't do this, if we do not do this and stand up and draw a line in the sand and let corporations know what they can and cannot get away with, you're going to have no privacy rights left. Again, I go back to the simple fact I don't condone file sharing of copyrighted material, but at the same point, I don't condone companies spying on their customers. Sure, if a law enforcement agency comes to them and said this person is we think is doing something illegal and they have a warrant for that person and say we have a wiretap warrant, then guess what? That's the legal way it should be done. But you have a company who is going to be financially being rewarded for providing data services that are going to be providing mainstream media content, movies, videos, music, where customers are going to have to pay for that. And that same company is going to go out and prosecute the same people that are trying to download an episode of a show that they missed that they didn't have on their DVR. There is something wrong with this company. I refuse to support them. I really do. And I'm sure some of you are going to say, Todd, you're off the top rope on this, but you know what? It's just wrong. It is really, really wrong. I want to call me now, 619-342-7365, and tell me, call the voicemail hotline and tell me if I'm right or if I'm wrong. Tell me what you want to do about this. Tell me if you've canceled your AT&T service. Have you walked with your wallet? I want to know if you've walked with your wallet or if you are going to hang with this company and continue to support them for doing what they're doing. I don't care which side you come down on the fence. Don't get me wrong. It's your choice. But I would like to hear those of you that are going to stay with AT&T and those of you that aren't. I want to hear both sides. And I want to hear from the ones that don't have an opinion, or maybe you don't have maybe you're not a customer of them. But I really want to hear from the AT&T customers. I really, really do. I just, I can't believe it. AT&T is a company that does not deserve to be in a corporate America. Absolutely don't. I agree wholeheartedly with Dave Weiner and his assessment of this company. And I can't believe no more people aren't outraged about this. Link will be up in the show notes. Send your comments. Want to hear them. I really, really do. I'll get off my soapbox now. I'll try to settle down. And we've got a crowd. We got some people on MyLifeOnline.tv. So cool. And we got Ryan Ozawa from here in Honolulu. He's on the line, and they're messaging. So oh gosh, a lot of fun. Okay, those of you that have been playing around with Popfly, that's a new service by Microsoft. They've updated the service, so make sure you check it out. Ton of new features. They've got a whole bunch of cool stuff here. Silverlight streaming hosted videos. They've got a suggestion to help build your mashups. They got a mashup designer. They've got all kinds of cool stuff here. So if you haven't been playing around with Popfly already, definitely get over there and check it out. They've got community supported stuff too, with virtual Earth 3D support, World of Warcraft player data, Weatherbug, top iTunes song, and so forth. So check that out. Hey, you know, there's this really smart kid, and I mean, this kid is doing some amazing stuff. His name's Yuvi. He's a 16-year-old from Chennai, India. And his blog says, I code, photograph, write, and try to be a student. One day, he says, I hope to work at Microsoft. Till then, I live my life, blog about it, and photograph it. You know, you got to check out this story. This kid has been doing some absolutely amazing work, doing in-depth research on specific websites. And he's been doing a very, very close examination of Engadget. And here's just a sample of his of an article that he had. I'm going to read the first paragraph of this. Most link to domains, and this is about talking about who they link to. Most link backs are to themselves. In fact, it has about 25 times the number of links of its closest competitor, which incidentally happens to be Engadget Mobile, an offshoot of Engadget. Heck, 42% of all links were links to themselves. This makes a lot of sense, as they're linking back to previous run gadget stories that may be of interest. Here's a graph showing the difference visually. So essentially, you know, Engadget, they do great work. Don't deny that they do great stuff. But they link internally 42% of the time. The rest of the time, they're linking out 58% of the time. And it goes on and on. Number of posts, number of sites with posts, number of sites with, it just go sites with number of red links. And he just digs in and finds all this cool stuff about Engadget. And it brings up a very good point that I have been seeing lately, is I've been seeing people writing articles that reference maybe something I have written, and they never link back to the source article. And it is kind of aggravating. And I always try to link back to all the articles I talk about. And if I miss one, I usually try to correct it later, but I generally never miss. And of course, someone's going to come back and say, Todd, you missed 25 last month. But it's an issue I see with a lot of bloggers these days, is they don't link back to the source material. And what that does is that diminishes the value of the original work that people have put in there. Okay, next article, actually next site, and I am going to be digging into this site tomorrow. I have some concerns. It's called EveryZing, everyzing.com. It used to be Podzinger. They've relaunched. This is a JavaScript heavy site. If I put my name in there, what it does is it they index audio and video. So you can do a search for, you can put my name in, Todd Cochran, and it comes up with some links. But the problem I'm having so far is that the RSS links are not directly back to my data. It's this everyzing.com PHP blah 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 a colon comma a question mark HTTPP, and it doesn't show my link back to my original content. And along with some other stuff, there's no direct link back to the websites I can find so far. So I'm going to be examining every Zing tomorrow, and I may be zinging it in the Geek News Central website. If you have any relationship with every Zing, stand by, because I'm about to call you out based upon what I have initially seen so far. It doesn't look like you're playing nice with media creators' content and respecting their data and the links back to their websites. So stand by. I wish them luck with their site, but if they're being evil, I will definitely call them out. So I'm on a roll tonight, aren't I? I am definitely on a roll. Feeling feisty, ready for the weekend. Okay, I've talked about VHO a couple of times on the show, and they've done great. They have had a surge of traffic of 184%, and they've got a user base now of 12.5 million. That's amazing. That is really amazing. With 70,000 video publishers producing stuff and publishing to it, and they've got some of the best-known brands in music, sports, politics, and entertainment, and they've got CBS, Billboard, Paramount Pictures, US Weekly, Car and Driver. So a lot of the mainstream media stuff too. So if you haven't checked out VO, VEOH.com, you'll definitely want to do that. Another site that I found today that I have not been aware of is an aggregated site that you can search, and it'll basically bring in seven different websites and to be able to find new media. It's called ULinks, ULinkx.com. They're aggregating web videos so that you don't have to. So this is a site that looks like it has some definite possibilities. The folks over at ComScore, you know, I hate to say it, but the days of being able to measure stuff by surveys and all that stuff, you know, we're able to get a lot deeper into the metadata now. But ComScore has put together a widget metrics, and the article over on GigaOhm says it's more like a jelly bean contest in that they have ranked the top 10 widgets. It's a widget metrics. Now, I'm sorry, I'm not buying ComScore's top 10 list. I've never heard of some of this stuff. It's like, this is really funny. It really is. When you go over and look at their list, you're going to go like, huh? I'd love to have everybody go look and let me know if they've ever used one of these widgets that they've had on, or if they've seen this widget before. I've seen lots of widgets, but I've never seen any of these widgets that are on there. So ComScore somehow came up with a top 10 list, and I don't buy into them being able to measure this real accurately, and neither does GigaOhm. But I'll let you all decide yourselves. All right, Nick Bradbury links back to an article that Dave Weiner wrote on the BBC, which I encourage all of you to go read. It's talking about the best podcast player, some tools that are going to be needed, and he talks about two or three different things that he thinks the net needs. And one thing that Dave wants is he wants perpetual hosting. In other words, the day he dies, he wants to be able to put all this, or have his executor, I guess, executor, or whatever they call that. Oh, gosh, it's late here. He wants to be able to have lifetime, or not lifetime, infinite hosting for his data. He wants to be able to have it up there so that when his kids or his great-grandkids or five generations from now can go back and read some of the goofy stories that he's written, or maybe they'd appreciate forward-looking technology posts, and, of course, they'd maybe want to read about themselves. Now, I think this is really cool. And now Nick links back and is basically saying, yeah, I'd love to have this. You know, and how many of you would love to have your spoken, your video and your audio stuff guaranteed to, live way beyond you, you know, and hopefully for, you know, forever. Now, that's a big, forever is a pretty big, that's a pretty big order. And he says, hey, I'll pay $10,000 to make sure my data is secured and is available. The question is, how long, you know, what kind of a company could come out and really say, okay, we'll be able to keep it in a format that's going to be able to be read in 50 years. He also talked about really even going out a little farther in the limb and saying, well, I want some of my media beamed into space. And pretty interesting. He talks even in the way the Earth is becoming. He'd rather have his data outbound in space someplace, because at least then he can just about be guaranteed that somewhere in the universe his data will be, if we destroy ourselves here on this planet. So pretty far out stuff, but what would it be worth to you to have that kind of assurance that your media was going to be stored for, essentially forever? All right, there's a good article over on Gizmodo talking about how Justin.tv's live video system was born, and I'm going to just leave the link up for you all to read. It goes into and it shows the rig he's using and talks about the hardware. As far as I know, this is the first time that this has been revealed, and it talks about the rig they built here, so very, very cool. I'm going to be studying that very close. Well, more bad news on the privacy front. There was a ruling today by a judge in California, and I think those of you that are geeks will get a kick out of this. In a decision reported late Friday by CNET News, a federal judge in Los Angeles found that a computer's server's RAM, or random access memory, is a tangible document that can be stored and must be turned over in a lawsuit. Okay, they subpoenaed me for my RAM. Okay, I'll open my computer up and I'll send them the RAM chips. obviously, the judge had not a clue, but what this essentially means is that TorrentSpy is going to have to collect logs of their users and turn it over directly to the MPAA. This is a groundbreaking ruling that means that anyone defending themselves in a civil suit can be required to turn over information in their computer's RAM hardware, which could force companies and individuals to store vast amounts of data. Now, they're saying that the TorrentSpy is going to be allowed to strip the IPs of the logs. So what the MPAA is trying to get here is they're trying to capture the log data coming from TorrentSpy to prove that their users are sharing copyrighted material. They're going to use that against them. They've said that they can remove the IPs so that it can't be initially, so that data can't be tracked back to the users. And they're saying, and of course, the folks on the MPAA side, everyone's, screaming for nothing over this. But this is really the first time where a website that says, no, we don't keep logs on you, or we don't keep logs on the activity on this website, the privacy policy is going to have to be changed because of this court ruling. So I'm sure this is going to be appealed, and this one may go all the way to the Supreme Court the way it's looking, because this is new law here. We'll have to see what happens. But for now, the TorrentSpy is going to have to create logs so they can be turned over to the plaintiff, the MPAA. And again, this is just another, a whack of the axe into the tree to whack away at privacy rights of users out there. All right, next article is from Guardian Unlimited, broadband speeds across the globe. Well, the United States has slid once again. We are now ranked 24th in the world on our penetration of broadband and availability of high-speed internet. So it's just a continued slip here, and it's just amazing that China has as large in numbers as they do. They're saying now that there are more than 1.1 billion of the world's estimated 6.6 billion people online, and that a third of those are now accessing the internet on high-speed internet. goes into a little more info here, talking about how the size of the market with the United States has actually got what's kind of odd here is that the U.S. leads the pack with over 60 million broadband subscribers, with China second at 41, but we're still ranked as low as we are because the penetration level within the United States is just under 53%. So that's what drives us into 24th place. So that's kind of curious. It really, really is. You know, you've got a large number of users, but at the same time, the penetration is ranked 24th. And of course, the speed is an issue too. So anyway, I'll link this up in the show notes here, and you guys can dig into this a little deeper. But it's not as bleak as it sounds. But I tell you, I need more bandwidth. How about you guys? We all do. Okay, there's Congress is getting ready to have hearings on the what's being referred to as a third pipe, the 700 megahertz spectrum. When the TV systems all go to high def, it's going to open up 84 megahertz of spectrum that the FCC is probably going to be auctioning off. Now, they're saying that 24 megahertz of that is going to be set aside for public safety, leaving the remaining 60 hertz to auction to private companies. We'll have to see what happens here, but this is going to go down in 2009 when analog television stations are replaced. So we'll keep an eye on that and see where they go with this. This is a big moneymaker for the U.S. government when they auction this off. Billions of dollars is spent by companies to acquire the spectrum. Got a great article over on snap2objects.com. It's 85 killer resources every designer should know, and this is a great resource for anyone that's looking for graphics, looking for different types of tools to help in website design. An awesome list of different applications and websites. Link will be up in the show notes. Okay, Apple updated Windows Safari to version 3.01 to fix some of the security bugs out there. They also had over a million downloads of Safari within the first 48 hours. If you're looking to build the ultimate iTunes media server, I've got a great article for you that I'm going to link up in the show notes. It's not cheap, but it's done very, very well. And it's basically a how-to and how a guy did it to make it so that it was not geeky and that an average person could use it. So I'll have that linked up in the show notes. This is over on the forums at MacTalk.com. A little bit of a scuffle between eBay and Google. eBay was having one of their big events, and Google decided to crash the party by offering a big party to attract eBay merchants over. Essentially, they're trying to win them onto Google's own pay service. So as we talked about PayPal here a little bit earlier, eBay wasn't very appreciative that Google was trying to essentially crash their party, and they eBay pulled all advertising from U.S. Google sites. And eventually Google said, oh, maybe we shouldn't have this party in conjunction at the same time that eBay's having their big deal. And they canceled their party. So guess what? eBay won that one because they said, oh, you're going to do that? We're going to walk with our advertising dollars. And it's the first time you've seen Google really blink, really. Okay, there's a great videos of, I've never seen nothing like it. They're physics simulations, and they're amazing. It's unlike anything I've ever seen, and people are awing and oohing about it. And I'll let you link up to this and look at these four videos. They are not, I guess the best way to say is they're animated. Animated physics simulations of fire and water. Very, very cool. Memorizing. The first one I'm not so impressed with, but the last two I was like, wow. That's pretty cool. And when you see him, you'll kind of get the point. Okay, gosh, I got a whole bunch of stuff here. I still got stuff left, but we are approaching an hour on the show. I've got a link. I'll tell you the key items here. We've got Boston University students fighting the RIAA for not wanting to have IP related back to who they belong to them. There's a great article on extreme tech on building a motherboard. And there's a great article from Chris Perillo talking about tweaking your ClearType font settings to be able to use Safari to get a better visual on those particular graphics using that application. A little more Atlantis space news. Okay, how am I going to give this flag away? I can see how I'm going to do this here. I've got a stack of email, and I think I've got some voicemails too. And I don't know. I haven't listened to the voicemails yet. Let's go ahead and listen to the voicemails first, and then we'll make a decision on who's going to get the flag tonight. I got to put write some names down and do some sort of a random thing here. So let me go ahead and play the first voicemail. As always, make sure you send your comments to geeknews@gmail.com or call the voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365.
Hey, Todd, it's Susabelle in St. Louis.
Hey, Susabelle.
Just a couple of comments from your Tuesday show. First of all, I agree with your wife. I wouldn't want to be 24/7 anything. My private life is my private life, and my online life is my online life, and I really don't want those to cross a whole lot. So I can kind of agree with her, about that. And I'd like to have a webcam that pointed out the window onto the little park across the street from my house. That might be kind of cool, see the kids playing and all that, but that's about as far as I would go with that. Second, the guy with the Zoom tattoo, oh my goodness. I actually followed a link out to his blog where he put the pictures up and announced that he'd done it. And the first few comments on his blog are obviously from his friends saying, oh, wow, I can't believe you did it. It looks so great, blah, 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 kind of really amusing to me. Because I do think it's kind of ridiculous, and he's going to be in the same boat as that guy that got the Pikachu tattoo in 1989. They'll be together in a room commiserating about what kind of dumb things they can do. And third, just a response to, an agreement with Tom's voicemail about why we shouldn't let Windows handle its own security. It's kind of like you need to have those checks and balances in place. We need Symantec. We need McAfee. We need Norton out there kind of giving us a second round of being able to cover this stuff because, Microsoft has not got a really great track record in making sure that their operating system is safe and can't be broken. So I look at that and think, well, they probably need somebody else to look at them and see if they're really any good or not, and that's what those other companies are for. So I don't see that changing anytime soon. We actually had a big discussion about that this afternoon in a class I was taking for Windows Vista. So that was one of the determiners, is that they really can't provide their own security without those checks and balances, and that's what those other companies are good for. So keep up the good work. I do have something I need to email you about, and I will do that a little bit later tonight and hopefully can get an answer from you tomorrow. Thanks. Bye.
Oh, did I respond, Susabelle, to that email? I don't remember seeing it. And if I missed it, please send it again. I've been pretty slammed here on email, but if I didn't get back to you, I apologize. Let's go ahead and play the next voicemail.
Hey, Todd. This is Rob.
Hey, Rob.
We met up at the meetup in Michigan. Want to tell you, just enjoyed the show. Love the show. I had started a new podcast on basic computing and, just a lot of kind of like low-level computer kind of stuff that I find that a lot of people just don't know. My podcast is at www.coffeeman.com. That's FFEENN. I was interested in talking to you about becoming a member. Being part of the tech podcast network. And I just want to talk to you more about that. If you could just
Hey, what I'm going to do is, I think we've chatted already a little bit online. So as I mentioned to you in the, I believe online, is we require that the podcaster created at least 7 shows. and that we go through and review the website and make sure you got an RSS feed and actually have a link to the audio on your website and, you know, do a little review. So when you get to 7, send me an email and let me know. I actually go ahead and apply for membership once you hit 7 shows, and I'll be more than happy to take a look and run it through the committee on and looking at you to get you as part of the membership over there. But thanks for calling, and didn't realize, I kind of forgot that you had said you had made left a voicemail, and sorry to cut you off, but definitely looking forward to hearing your podcast. All right, let's go ahead and play the last voicemail of the night, and then we got some, oh boy, the emails. We're not going to be able to cover them all, but let me go ahead and play this last voicemail.
Hi, Todd. It's Jamie from the MedicCast.
Hey, Jamie.
And I just wanted to touch on some comments about the live blogger at the NCAA event. This is probably, just guessing here, but I really think this is probably has more to do with the fact that he was blogging live, because that would be considered a live broadcast, and those deals are carefully orchestrated by the sports organizations, the NCAA, the NFL, whatever it might be. And that's a broadcast. Those broadcast deals are spelled out and paid for with good money. If he was just writing a column that he was going to post after the game was completed, I think that would have been an acceptable thing as a reporter. But because he was actually live blogging, he was blogging the play-by-play of the game and comments about the game while it was in progress, that probably is a violation of the broadcasting rights. And so I think this maybe isn't as much a deal about blogging not being treated as normal press, but more of a case of a blogger using technology in a way that is ahead of what the credentials allow, at least with regards to what would be considered print press. TV stations that are there doing interviews before and after the game, they're still not able to broadcast those the game itself, and other than excerpts during their newscasts. So I think that might be the key difference here. I did a lot of news gathering work in the past for television and radio, and that's typically the way that works. There's one organization, whether it be ESPN or one of the networks, that has the deal to cover the game live and broadcast the whole game in its entirety, but everybody else that has press credentials can come in and do short excerpts of the game and interviews with players before and after the game. And that's what then that news press pass allows. Anyway, keep up the great work. Love the Geek News Central podcast as always, and I'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Hey, thanks for that. And I guess I can understand that on those rules. But at the same point, what's to stop me from being at home watching TV and live blogging the event from home? Is that illegal too? That's, you know, I don't know. I guess that's their prerogative. Okay, what I'm going to do here is kind of weird. I'm going to do a podcast break. You're not even going to know it because I'm going to stop the recording. I've got all the names written down on some pieces of paper here, and I need to rip those up and throw them. I got something here. I'll throw them in a glass. I got a coffee cup here that's empty. I'm going to throw the names in a coffee cup and shake them up, and then I'm going to pull a name out. And I think we've got, it looks like about 40 people that replied for the 65th anniversary flag giveaway. So we're going to take it. You guys aren't going to know it. We're going to take probably for me a couple minutes, but for you about 2 seconds. I'll be right back. Now, in retrospect, that was probably kind of silly. But I've been gone a couple of minutes, and I'm back, but... Weird. Anyway, I've got a winner for us here. I want to congratulate Joel Ross. And Joel's website is over at rossco.com. He's our 65th anniversary flag giveaway winner. Congratulations, Joel. If you will, I'll send you an email, but send me a email with your mailing address, and we'll get this flag out for you. Let me go ahead and congratulations, by the way. We're going to have a lot more of these kinds of cool giveaways here during the summer. This is our summer way giveaway time. Tell people about the show. Stay subscribed. That's the main thing. It's the main goal here during the summer is keep you guys engaged. And we're going to up the ante as we move into summer. So you're definitely going to want to stay tuned in. All right, let me go ahead and go into my actual show notes here. I want to thank everyone sent great suggestions here. I really, really did. And I got a lot of great feedback, and I even got some links to some sites that talked about, hey, don't forget what the flag's about, and there's just too many to read. But I do want to thank every one of you that sent your comments in about what you liked and what you disliked about the show. I appreciate all of you. I really, really do. It's greatly appreciated. But let me go ahead and get into some of the regular responses that people sent from the last show. And I got an email from Paul Figiani from out of New York. And Paul said, he says, yes, I'm listening, Todd. Here's the deal. The video card is not going to improve the render times. The video card will enhance the efficiency of real-time effects as you work. The computer CPU will determine rendering efficiency. I don't think you spend much time in Apple Motion, do you? Well, I don't, Paul. He says, well, a high-end video card will really improve performance because it's so graphic-intensive. Since you spend most of your time in Final Cut, which I do, I would suggest looking at into a Mac Pro with the ATI Radeon X1900 512 meg card. I would also suggest a minimum of 2 gigs of RAM. Don't buy the RAM from Apple. Buy the machine with the stock 1 gigahertz and buy 2 additional gigs from Crucial for $179. In this case, you'll end up with 3 gigs. In the end, save yourself about $100. Keep in mind that your current MacBook Pro is not designed for running HD video efficiently. From Paul. And thanks, Paul. Definitely appreciate your feedback. And, you know, Paul does some great stuff. He works, he's an executive producer with Doug Kay. And what Doug does over there, they do all kinds of great stuff. And I have to get some links up for to some of Paul's work as well. He had podcastrigs.com. I think he's actually combined that into either the Gigavox site or one of the other ones. But anyway, I'll link up to some data. Paul's a great resource for material and gear, and he does a bang-up job doing reviews. He helped with the audio section. He actually went through and proofread the audio section of my book, Podcasting the Do-It-Yourself Guide, and provided technical feedback. So true professional when it comes to audio and video. Got an email also from Jordan talking about Mac alternatives to Camtasia. He says, check out Don McAllister's screencast online. He uses a Snap Pro Z and also uses iShowU. So I've got Snap Pro Z, and, you know, I don't know. I'm going to have to just look at these screencasts and see what they're doing there. But I have not been overimpressed so far with the screen capture software within the Mac. Camtasia really got it nailed on the PC, and it does a really, really great job. But I will buckle down and see what I can find on the Mac side. Got an email as well from Joe. He says, hey, a great video capture application for Mac is Snap Pro Z. So he recommends that as well. Works great on short videos. How's it work on long videos? I guess that's a question. Got an email from Jonathan. He says, hey, Todd, I was looking for that really geeky Firefox song you ended up a recent show with. I've been trolling your site and listening to online MP3 archives, but those shows don't seem to end with the music. Do you have a hard link or search term I could use to find that MP3? Boy, I thought I put that in the show notes. If I didn't, I need to go back and dig through that. Jonathan, if I don't, it's probably not going to be in the show notes tonight, but keep pinging on me, okay? Because I'm going to have to go back and find that. And if I think this came through in an attachment, so it may be a little easier to find. And I'll actually email it to you once I find it. Or if I actually have a hyperlink to it, I'll send it to you. And if I didn't get it in the show notes, go to the podcast section and look in there as well. There should be a link. If I missed it, I apologize. Got an email from Larry. He talks and says, hey, go use iShowU as well. He also talks about Snap Z Pro. And he says, I have a quad 2.66 gigahertz Mac Pro and love it. It will encode a full-length movie to H.264 in about 45 minutes using popcorn. I agree with you on the Windows Home server. I'll be buying it. Windows Home Server is going to be available without buying a system as an OEM release. If you're using Windows Home Server with your Macs, use AutoMount. It's an open software to mount your share on the boot. If you get a Mac Pro, give the extra $250 for the 1900 XT video card. Well, there's two pushes on the 1900 XT. So Paul's definitely onto something there. And I tell you what, the so far as the, what was I going to reply to here? The Windows Home Server, there's actually now they have got the, I guess their pre-release. I'm probably saying that wrong, but their final version before they go with, you know, go out with their gold disc. And I've got that downloaded. I need to update to my machine. I've been doing beta testing with here. This upgrade requires a complete slick of the machine, and this is going to be the final time they require a slick. And I was actually having problems with one of the betas, so it works out a good time. But anyone can get it now. It's available online. The Windows Home Server, I guess pre-release or whatever they're actually calling it. Got an email from Michael. He's talking about saving mucho dinero on using the GoDaddy codes. How much did you save? Let me look here. Oh, he was on registerfly.com that had their accreditation revoked by ICANN. And what else did he say here? He goes on and talks about mobile type, some other things. I don't have time to get through this whole email, but appreciate that you send some feedback. It saved some money. I got an email from, just too many. Everyone that sent email and sent links, I'll go ahead and put those up in the show. Thanks from Sam, Zane, Wayne, Laxman, Doug, Servo, Doug, Neil, Jake, Rob, on and on. Everyone sending emails. Again, subscribe to the newsletter, okay? Get subscribed to the newsletter, and we're going to pick a winner from the newsletter list next show. And we're going to be giving away some commemorative coins that you're not going to get anywhere else, not online, nothing. So get your names in for the drawing, signing up for the newsletter. Again, as always, send your comments to geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com, or call the voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365. Until next time, you all take care. Aloha.